Need some motivation on your Chinese business endeavour? Maybe curious about what the Chinese business environment is all about? Or want to laugh out loud listening to war stories on the ground in China? Then this is your show, China Business Cast. And your host, Michael Michelini.
Okay, thank you everybody for joining us for a China Business Cast. I have a fun one today. We have Shlomo with us on the call. So he's going to be co-hosting with me going forward. I'm really excited to have him on board. He has a lot of different perspectives. Maybe it's better, Shlomo, if you want to introduce yourself to everyone.
Sure. First, Mike, I'm really, really happy to co-host it with you. It's a great honor. I hope to have more and more of those. It's also a lot of fun. I've been to other podcasts before as a guest, and I always enjoy them. So thank you for that. Except of that, a little bit about my background. I lived in Beijing for 3 years, been very, very active and still at the ecosystem in Beijing. I run the Lean Startup Meetup. The Beijing Lean Startup Meetup in Beijing with 1,700 members, as well as have my own startup in Beijing called App in China. And through the group, I've learned to know the startup scene in Beijing very well. And this is how also I got to know you. I think that's a brief one. Now I live in Israel and going back and forth to Beijing every few months. So still keeping a close touch with what's going on there.
All right. Cool. Yeah, I'm really excited to have you, and you're already getting some pretty cool guests lined up. We'll be getting more regular with the show, and a lot of it's thanks to you. So, you know, I'm happy to have you. So today's topic is, we thought it'd be a fun one, just the two of us having a healthy debate, you know, about Hong Kong versus mainland China, like on the, I guess we're both more technical, you know, internet business kind of guys. So talking more on the, you know, internet, business, startups, tech scene generally, right? Would you say? Or is it, I guess we also talk about some other just general differences or issues between the two.
Exactly. I think that, I mean, when we prepared for this show, we've managed to come up with a few subjects, with a few topics. Not all of them are tech related, but that would be interesting for people maybe out of the region. We also found some stuff that we probably disagree about. So that would be a healthy debate.
Sure. So... Yeah, I think, you know, we were talking before we start recording, is it okay that we disagree? I think the listeners would appreciate that because that's what makes the show, you know, genuine and real, and people can listen to both sides. And, you know, I think if we just agreed on everything, it would be kind of boring, actually. So I'm looking forward to hearing both sides.
Yeah, and guys, feel free to disagree with us as well. We're open for that.
And of course, we always want to hear feedback. So leave comments on the show or social media or however you guys email, however you guys like to do it. All right, so let's maybe just get started. So the way we structured the show is we have a list here of different topics where one of us is going to kind of take the lead and, you know, have a little bit of a discussion, and then the other side could put their input, right?
Yeah, definitely. So you've mentioned before that we're going to talk about Hong Kong versus China. And some people, some people think it's the same place.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So yeah, like I put like as a joke, wait, isn't Hong Kong China? What was really funny is even the U.S. government sent me a document and I couldn't see Hong Kong on a country drop-down list. There was no Hong Kong, so I had to send it to China, which was actually Hong Kong address. Literally, maybe I can put a picture of some of the, maybe I'll delete some of the personal information, but the address says China, but it got delivered to me in Hong Kong because I guess they understood that the mailman, the postal service understood the difference. But yeah, I guess I'd like to say that Hong Kong has an acronym at the end, SAR, which means Special Administrative Region. So, you know, I think... I don't want to get too political on this show because, you know, we're more business than, but a lot of times business and politics do overlap. But yeah, of course, it used to be kind of like a special British region. And then there was a handover to mainland China in 1997, where basically they report to the Beijing government, but they still have their own political party and their own like kind of like political meetings. And they also have, which we'll cover in future points, but there's their own financial system and their own, you know, kind of business rules. So they can make up their own laws and rules in Hong Kong. And technically, it's a border. Even mainland Chinese have to cross through a border to get into Hong Kong, as well as everyone else. There's a border between mainland China and Hong Kong. So it is
get a special permit.
And permits and everything. So we will save that for future points. But just so as everybody's clear, I think I was a, you know, quote unquote, you know, typical American that maybe didn't really understand this before I came over here. So I think maybe Shlomo was like, do you really need to clarify that? But I think there might be some, maybe the Americans, but I think even other people in other parts of the world that might not know the differences. So
for sure. But if you look at different websites, I think that you have an option there for China or Hong Kong. So I think most of the Western world perceives this as two different countries. Obviously, that would be different if you ask the Chinese government, which you just mentioned. Yeah. But we don't get into politics here.
Yep. All right.
Let's talk a little bit about visa issues, because that definitely corresponds with borders and everything and what's going on in China versus Hong Kong, I think, especially for entrepreneurs coming in. And my experience with coming to China as an entrepreneur is that the hardest thing, people ask, what's the hardest thing? What's the biggest challenge when you come to China? And I think the biggest challenge is getting yourself a visa as an entrepreneur and stay there, because the options are very, very limited and you really need to kind of make your way in and stay there somehow. And there are all kinds of different solutions. You know, you got business visa, people go back and forth. It's like a story of people living in China. How do you stay? What's your visa status? Mm-hmm. So that's very, very complicated. Mike, as far as I know, you already got a permanent residency, so you don't have a problem.
Yeah.
So you're very fortunate. I don't have a Chinese wife, therefore I had more problems with that.
Yeah, well, I guess that's actually another reason I'm like right on the border of China and Hong Kong. I've been on this, technically I'm in Shenzhen side, which is a city in mainland China, but because of the visa issue, I think it was one of my factors when I was first deciding which city in China to live in, because I couldn't get longer than like a 30-day stay, so I didn't want to fly out every 30 days. So because of this border on Hong Kong, you're technically leaving China. So I actually meet a lot of cool tech entrepreneurs in mainland China that are coming down to Hong Kong for visa runs. So yeah, I mean, this is just a big struggle in mainland China. I have a lot of friends that have gotten stuck in China. They're living in Hong Kong even to this day. They from Shanghai, Beijing, even Shenzhen, they just had visa issues or they were just getting tired of it. But technically, so maybe I'll speak on the Hong Kong side. Hong Kong is not really easier than China for visas, but they are pretty easy with tourist visas. So no, most countries can get a tourist entry on arrival. So you can just get stamped into Hong Kong. You don't need to apply first and get a visa and pay fees. Usually, I don't want to say every country, but a lot of countries around the world can with any passport, can just fly into Hong Kong. And normally, it's at least I'll speak for Americans, it's a 90-day or 3-month tourist stay.
Same for Israelis.
Same for Israelis. I think a lot are 90 days. Again, we could try to link in the notes some of these government websites, but that's just the difference. So a lot of times entrepreneurs end up kind of like picking Hong Kong because they originally have China on their list, but they're having these visa issues and they're either tired of flying back and forth, or maybe they just, their country, some countries are getting really hard to get into China with. So they end up in Hong Kong.
Yeah. Okay. You want to talk about more about maybe opening companies?
Sure.
Let's do that.
Sure. So
and you're an expert in that actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've learned this. I remember when I first started and, you know, it's been a long time now, but 2007, I was starting to figure out how to do business in China for my e-commerce business. And there was nothing really online. So I went to China and I was talking to lawyers. I thought I had to set up a company directly in China to do business in China. But even my lawyers then told me that I should set up a Hong Kong company first and then later have the Chinese company registered underneath the Hong Kong company as a foreign company by a Hong Kong parent company. So, of course, that sounds really weird and I didn't understand it. And I always thought like Hong Kong was like a middleman. Like I was buying on Alibaba and everything. And when I saw Hong Kong as the country for the company, I thought it was like a trading company. But a lot of times factories have these companies in Hong Kong because the taxes are much lower and you can also do international business a lot easier. You know, that's a whole podcast. I mean, this is what this whole show is going to be about, is about business in China. But, you know, in China, you can't operate in any other currency except RMB or Chinese yuan, which is the country's currency. It's very regulated on the currencies and you have to convert everything into RMB to get it into the country and to use it. Whereas in Hong Kong, you can have a multi-currency account, which is, of course, you can have euros, dollars, even RMB, Hong Kong dollars. So you can get paid in that currency and you can hold it or you can exchange it or you can do whatever you want. It's your money. And the taxes are very a lot lower at 16.5% corporate tax. And you can even potentially get offshore status if you can prove that. So a lot of times people, even they live in China, like a lot of these like solopreneurs, they are living in China as a tourist and they have their company in Hong Kong where they're maybe, it's easiest to think of it as like a B2B trading company for factories. So someone wants to buy 1,000 pieces of a, MP3 player, and then they get the wire into the customer wires money to say their HSBC Hong Kong account in dollars. They can keep those dollars. They don't have to go to like the Chinese bank and then get it converted to RMB. You know, they keep it there. It's all English online banking. And then they could transfer it into China to the Chinese factory, or maybe even sometimes a Chinese factory has their own Hong Kong company and you can transfer it to them. So that's just one example of many. But I think most people would agree that Hong Kong is a much easier place to do business.
Right. And about the one more point about the currency, from my experience, at least with China, you can get a multiple currency account, maybe at least for dollars. You can accept dollars. It's just the process is very cumbersome and you need to have the different approvals and stuff like that. And you need to say what the money is for. And that's fairly complicated. Mike, a question on this, by the way. Can you, on your day-to-day life, use RMB in Hong Kong? When I was there, I never tried it, but would people accept that? RMB is the Chinese currency, by the way, if you weren't following.
Yep. So there's a business side with a bank account, which because Hong Kong is a special region, they can hold Chinese yuan in the bank accounts. You might have to apply or tell the bank that you want this, but normally banks now are giving this to account holders. And as far as using it in a day-to-day, they have been pretty accepting of taking it. Of course, they don't have to. They could force you to get Hong Kong dollars. So most people operate in Hong Kong dollars. You can't, even though we spoke about multi-currency accounts, if you're going to be at a restaurant or, as a tourist or a hotel, normally they won't accept anything but Hong Kong dollars. But the RMB has been pretty strong. Lately, the government's flipping it around to make it weaker. But, for years, it was getting stronger to the U.S. dollar. Actually, another thing to note, the Hong Kong dollar. Well, actually, I think we're going to that next, huh? We're kind of going into currency now, right? But But with currency, the Hong Kong dollar is pinned to the U.S. dollar at about 7.78 Hong Kong dollars to one U.S. dollar. So that means changes in a dollar to the RMB, that also equally affects the Hong Kong dollar. So what's been happening over the last, since I've been in China, is the RMB has gotten stronger to the dollar. So if you hold RMB, you will, by default, earn money. But actually, the last, 3 months or so. But actually, it's kind of switched. So the dollar is getting stronger to the RMB. And a lot of people speculate that the Chinese government is doing that on purpose because they want to improve the export market. So it's kind of a very long answer to nowadays, maybe people don't want RMB because it's getting weaker to the dollar over time. Rather, the trend before the last few months was getting stronger. Mm-hmm. But still, most people still want Hong Kong dollars usually in most restaurants.
I want to get back to what we spoke about opening a company. And I think that at least from the for opening a Chinese company, this is very, very, very complicated. It does get better over the years, a little easier, but still it takes a long time. It takes, people say, 4 to 6 months. I've heard of stories of even more. And you need to have a special category. You know, you can only do these kind of things under that category. So things have been very complicated for foreigners, at least, opening a Chinese company. These are called the WFOE. That's the initials for a
wholly foreign owned entity. WF.
I always miss that. Confusing.
It is a weird one. But yeah, yeah.
Anyway, if you hear the word WFOE, that's what they mean. It's a Chinese company held solely by foreigners. Then you got other types of companies like JV, joint venture, which is usually a 50-50 company where the funding comes from both parties. And of course, you got wholly owned Chinese companies, which are held by Chinese. And maybe you know of some other examples. But generally speaking, people tend to do a lot of legal structures between Hong Kong companies and Chinese companies, depends on the case. We're not legal advisors, and this podcast is not meant to be. But generally speaking, you can have all sorts of that to solve different kind of problems in trading or in moving money around from out of China for tax purposes and stuff like that. But that's a very complicated issue.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think most people would agree that a business in Hong Kong is much cheaper and easier to set up and operate. But I guess just to be clear, the difference is, you know, they're different, let's just say, regions, to keep it easy. They're different regions. So if you really want to sell in China and you really want to accept Chinese currency, you know, it's going to be most of the time the best way is through a Chinese company. So if you're trying to hire staff in China legally, if you're trying to sell in China legally, I guess I put the word legally at the end because, of course, anywhere in the world you can, you know, you can go to, you can be a street vendor in Israel and I could sell stuff. I don't need a business for that. But, you know, to be legal, you should have a company, right? For any kind of, business anywhere. So, yeah, so legally it's just, and also if you want to try to get a visa. So while I am married, actually, I'm able to sponsor myself in China as an investment visa. So that's another perk of having a company in China, is you could potentially get a permanent residence through the company.
Exactly. But one more point on this. There are companies who outsource different kind of services. So essentially, sometimes even if you want to hire employees in China, there are solutions for that. You need to speak with these companies and understand legally how to do this. But as far as I know, in most of the cases, it's possible. It's possible to get around some of the things. If you are accepting payments in China, then I think in almost all cases, you have no choice then. You need to open a Chinese company, a WFOE.
Exactly. So, you know, we always, I think we both understand bootstrapped entrepreneurs, and we respect them. So we understand you might not have the funds or the, you know, the time available. And also, I think, you know, the lean startup, you know, maybe also just validating that there's customers in China for your business before you spend a lot of money setting up all this. So there is a fair in saying that you should maybe try something a little bit before you set up all these companies and structures.
Right. Okay. I think we've spoken a lot about the business stuff. Let's talk about how to live, like things that are more related to living in China versus Hong Kong, costs, stuff like that. Want to go ahead?
Sure. I mean, I saw this point on our notes here, but it's a tough one because, well, I mean, I guess by default, Hong Kong's going to cost much more than China, pretty much anywhere in Hong Kong to anywhere in China. But of course, there's Beijing and Shanghai, which I think you can also say better than me is getting more and more expensive very quickly. So I guess it depends. If we're talking first tier cities in China, they're getting more and more comparable to Hong Kong costs. But I still think Hong Kong rent is higher than Shanghai or Beijing. But they're getting close. So I think the costs in Hong Kong, again, it's also about location and, you know, what kind of amenities you need. But I always tell people to budget at least like $1,500 US a month for rent a month. Mm-hmm. And that's depending on how big of a place you need and roommates or not. But
that's actually a pretty, I mean, similar number to Beijing as well. And in city center or maybe in central areas, I don't know how well you know Beijing, but Sanlitun's example, mm-hmm. if you can get apartments there, it would be more than $3,000 a month for a two-bedroom apartment.
Well, sure. I was talking more like a one-bedroom, maybe with a roommate, but there's also mid-levels in Hong Kong, which you're talking like $4,000 or $5,000 a month for maybe a two-bedroom. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want Sanlitun, I think you're talking about like the premier place in Beijing, and I guess mid-levels right. is kind of like the premier place in Hong Kong, and yeah,
it's much higher.
it's more because Hong Kong, we didn't really give a proper introduction of it, but it's majority of its financial banks and real estate. So a lot of these people are wearing suits in Central District and they're working in banking or stock trading or investment banking. So they're getting paid top dollar, and their banks, a lot of times the banks pay for their rent. And so, yeah, it doesn't help the entrepreneurs that are just, you know, burning their own savings or trying to, you know, get off the ground. So it's
true. When we were there, we were living in a one-bedroom apartment, not at the city center, but fairly close. It was around $700 a month, which I think was pretty reasonable. You can get cheaper than that, but the quality of the apartments would not be as good then. And if you go, obviously, further in town, I don't know, Fifth Ring Road and on, obviously prices drops, but then you have to take the subway for 1.5 or 2 hours commuting to work every day.
Exactly. Sometimes. Yeah. So it's always hard to give an average. It depends on people like to live. But I usually say you kind of be living low. I think you barely get by on like 2000 or 2500 US a month in Hong Kong. Whereas like if you want to, you know, be cheap in China, there's tons of cheap places, maybe not in the first tier cities, but there's tons of small cities all around China where you can go as low as like $100 or $200 US a month on rent and like eat noodles for like a dollar. And, you know, so if you want to live cheap, you can find places in China to live cheap. But I think it's getting somewhat similar first tier cities in China to Hong Kong city major areas.
Yeah. But I think that for entrepreneurs, you've mentioned the, I don't know, second to fourth tier cities. This is where there are more opportunities for them. Obviously, it's harder, but it's cheaper. And then you can just build other things. And there are a lot of companies I hear about that actually go first to these smaller cities, because these are not small at all. Small city would be 1 million people. And then you got a lot of opportunities, business opportunities there that you can do and work. And you know, if also, there aren't so many foreigners there, so you can have your dent there and kind of build yourself up there. That's also a good opportunity to have.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, this is a tough one, but I think generally Hong Kong is going to cost you more for living than in China. But I think also you can usually make more money from if you're selling to companies. Companies in Hong Kong usually have higher, I don't know if you would agree with that, but have higher budgets usually for marketing or for services.
Yeah, I agree on that.
Okay, cool. Great. So we skipped a point. I want to maybe at least talk about quickly, but languages. So again, this is maybe for the naive American in me, but I didn't really know the difference of...
Don't blame only the Americans all the time.
So, but yeah, like in, well, it's not just Hong Kong, but it's kind of like the south province of Guangdong. It's actually called Guangdonghua, which is Cantonese. So that's the official language still in Hong Kong, whereas in mainland China, the official language is Mandarin. Although I guess just in the south of China, there's still a lot of people that still speak Cantonese, because it's kind of like in their roots, but it's still technically in, you know, Mandarin everywhere in mainland China.
Yeah, just a real quick overview on this. So Mandarin covers, I think, around 70% of the population in China. But even with this Mandarin, there are a lot of huas, there are a lot of dialects. And sometimes people would speak Mandarin, but it would sound very different than the Mandarin in some other province. Especially for people who are not native Chinese speakers, this is really, really hard because you get used to the kind of hua, the kind of dialect that you live where you live or where what you studied. So that can be challenging. But generally speaking, they're all called Mandarin. I have no idea about Cantonese. I just know that, as you mentioned, south of China and in Hong Kong, they do Cantonese, and it's much harder than Mandarin. So if you're weighing your options for learning a language in China, probably Mandarin would be the one.
Exactly. That's actually another reason I'm on the Shenzhen side is, well, there's a lot of reasons nowadays, but when I first came, it was still officially Mandarin. And, you know, I would recommend people, if they want to do business in China or long-term, to learn Mandarin. So try to submerge yourself in that. Whereas in a lot of my friends in Hong Kong don't learn Cantonese either. So they just usually stay in English or their native language, where usually, well, I guess that happens probably in first tier cities in China too. They don't learn Chinese, but there's more chances at least to do so.
Can you get away only in English in Hong Kong?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things. Like, you can talk to government, you can talk to banks, you can talk to, you know, your landlord usually in English. Most everybody speaks English in Hong Kong.
Okay, they were British.
Yeah, so that's one of the benefits, as English was kind of built into all their government and banking structures and educational systems. So yeah. Of course, there's a little bit of a thick Cantonese accent usually if they're not fresh on their English, but I think it's still pretty acceptable.
Right. You want to share your experience about some going back and forth between China and Hong Kong? I know that you do this sure. quite a lot.
I mean,
even daily sometimes, right?
We've had some calls where I've been crossing the border literally and switching.
That was yesterday or day before.
Yeah, exactly. So I live on the border. I literally am looking at the border from my window as we do this interview. And basically, I love both sides. So I'm kind of stuck on the middle. But there's about seven, I think, borders between Hong Kong and China. And in Google, I think I'm ranking top three or five of Hong Kong border, China border search queries on my site. But so I've really documented every single border, every single time. And you can cross by boat, by helicopter, by maybe plane. You can, of course, by foot, by bike, by car. I brought my folding bike across the border and rode on both sides. There's Lohu border, which is like a walking border. There's Huanggong, which is a 24-hour border. So you can take like a coach bus from basically downtown Hong Kong or Wan Chai district, and I can get to Shenzhen in 45 minutes at 24 hours a day. So I can get to my house in about an hour from downtown to Shenzhen. I've kind of gotten
a different country.
Yeah, I've gotten faster because I have like an APEC card and it's like an Asia Pacific Access card, I think, or economic card. So yeah, there's of course faster. There's slow and fast ways if you got to wait in the long lines or you know. And then actually, technically, I don't have a Hong Kong ID, but if I had a Hong Kong ID, that's really fast. Because you can go through these kind of like e-channels where you can just present your card. You don't have to see a actual, you know, customs official. You can just scan the card and the mm-hmm. doors just open and you just walk through the border. But you got to cross both, you know, you got to either enter or exit Hong Kong, and you got to either enter or exit mainland China. So there's two lines you got to cross technically, right? You got to leave and enter. So it kind of depends on which visa and what kind of passport you have. But there's ways, there's ferries, there's bridges. It's just, there's more and more. I think there's more coming even, but there's even talks about making this, the whole, it's also called the PRD, Pearl River Delta, okay. Which is kind of like the network of South China, like Guangzhou, Shenzhen, Hong Kong, Dongguan. So, you know, they're thinking about making this all one, some massive metropolis here in the South. And mm-hmm. easier border crossings for people in that like metropolis.
I think that the most common one, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Mike, would be crossing from Shenzhen coming. I mean, people come to the train station, then they take the subway, to the closest border and then just cross there. This is what I've done when coming from China to Hong Kong. We just took a train going from Beijing all the way down to Shenzhen. It takes about 10 and a half hours. It's actually pretty amazing to cross almost the whole country in one day. So you see different views and stuff. And then arriving to Shenzhen and then taking the subway there to cross the border. What's the name of that point? The most common one?
Lohu or Lohu.
Lohu, that's the one?
Yeah, so yeah, a lot of people take... Well, it's technically two borders.
It's a very large one. Very large.
Yeah, I think it's Lohu. It's actually on the China side, Lohu, L-U-O-H-O, Lohu. Mm-hmm. And on the Hong Kong side, it's called Lowu, L-O-W-U. So it just depends on which side of the border you're on. They're the same place. But yeah, that's pretty massive. And you can take a train on both sides. But you just got to note that probably don't get there later than like 11 p.m. I've had friends like running and catching the last train on the Hong Kong side after crossing the border. I think midnight really is the drop dead last time, but you got to make sure you get through the lines and everything. So the one thing, is just make sure your train subway's open on both sides of the border to get there. And the border itself closes at midnight.
Oh, at that point, it's closed at midnight. It's not a 24-hour one.
The only 24-hour one is Huanggang in Futian. But that's not accessible by subway. That's only... It's actually meant for tour buses or for drivers. So you'll see a lot of dual plates in Shenzhen with like the Hong Kong license. Because actually there's two different licenses, driver's licenses. You can't use the same license. And actually, we didn't even talk about that, but there's the UK system. So the cars drive on the left side of the road in Hong Kong. And then in mainland China, they, I guess, would call it the American system or what I'm not, I guess, but they drive on the right side. So the steering wheel is on the left side.
So they still cross.
But there's still some guys that have two plates and they can drive like... It's got to be confusing for them because their car is built for, you know, the UK system and their steering wheel is on like the right side. But they're in China and they're on driving on the right side with the passenger side on the right side. So it's actually kind of confusing. They got to keep track and not go on the wrong side of the road.
I'm interested to know what actually happens at the gate, how they change the lanes there.
True. Well, it's just kind of the border is just a big mashup of things. And I guess probably they have a one-way road and then it probably just merges into a highway. And then when you get off, you just got to remember on the street or something like that.
Oh, wow. That's very confusing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So we want to talk about some events, or we have a few different things on the topics here to pick from.
Yeah, let's do that.
So maybe you can, I guess we'll focus on Beijing because I guess every city in China has tons of different events or maybe major events.
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I must say that in 3 years, things have tremendously changed in Beijing and I guess all around China in terms of entrepreneurship and startups. There are much, much more events, more people are interested. And also with the recent years, the Chinese government is also encouraging entrepreneurship. So that also gives a kick to the whole eco startup scene. In Beijing, there are a few local events. One of them is the Lean Startup Meetup, which I'm organizing. That's the one with monthly events. But except of that, you've got other events like Startup Weekends. There is one called Beijing Tech Hive, which is actually roughly every quarter, which is similar to a Startup Weekend, but it's an ongoing one. Well, Startup Weekend would be maybe just once a year. But there are many, let's call them Startup Weekends over here. Not over here, in Beijing. Many, many events. You can see about a lot of these events on a newsletter called Startup Digest. And you can choose a city, and that would be Beijing, obviously. And then you can get a weekly newsletter with all the events happening. Ours is also there. Another type of events would be conferences. And a lot of the conferences, which are very, let's call them Chinese-like, are in Beijing versus other places like Shanghai. So Shanghai is more international. There would be more English-speaking people. The conferences there would be organized by internationals. So you got Casual Connect and you've got GWC, these kind of stuff. But in Beijing, you've got GMIC, which is Global Mobile Internet Conference. You've got GMGC, which is Global Mobile Gaming Confederation, a very, very big event. And if you really want to know what's happening on the grassroots of Chinese entrepreneurs, you should go to those. This is really interesting to see. The downside here is that most of the things are in Chinese. So you'd be, I don't know, you'll see very few foreigners. People would not speak English on the booths, but you can still go get around and then see different stuff. It's very, very interesting. I go there every year for the past 3 or 4 years, meeting people, seeing the new stuff happening. In terms of Shanghai, I know of China Joy and all the other international ones I've mentioned. And there are more foreigners going around and less, and English is, I won't say widely spoken, but more spoken than in Beijing.
True. Yeah, I would. I've been to some of those events and we've met at some of those events and I would agree. I think there's a little bit more English generally at startup events in Shanghai in my own experience too, but there's still a lot of English in Beijing. But maybe I'll go through my list here in the South China or in Hong Kong. There's a cool like local grassroots group called startupshk.com. They haven't really been doing their own events lately, but like Casey Lau is my friend there, and there's a few other like Gene, and they've done a great job like either having their own events or promoting the other events in this ecosystem. So they have a newsletter as well, an email list that I recommend. There's
let's add those in the show notes.
Definitely. There's Startup Weekends also down here. There's Barcamp, which is, I think there's also some up in Beijing.
Oh, I forgot that one. Yeah. I forgot that one in Beijing. Definitely.
Barcamp is the unconference, they call it, where it's more just like you kind of like vote up people and people can vote. Basically, anybody can be a speaker and anybody can go. They have multiple breakout rooms and you can speak about anything you want.
Yeah. I spoke there 3 or 4 times. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool way to kind of network and meet new people. Web Wednesday, which has kind of been around for everywhere, as long as I've been there. It's Napoleon Biggs is the organizer, and he usually it's like obviously Wednesday nights. Usually it's like a small fee for a drink and access, and there's like a speaker or a couple of speakers and a lot of networking. So I've been to that, and then also just like you said, in mainland China, Hong Kong is also governments are trying to encourage entrepreneurship. So there's more like local government events, like Start Me Up is a local government event organization, and there is IT Fest, which is another Hong Kong local kind of IT government meetup for technology companies. So those are usually. Well, in English, too, actually. So actually, even the government ones are a lot of times in English. So that's, again, one of the, well, I don't know if you call it advantage or not, but, you know, for those that aren't planning to or aren't good at Chinese, you know, they can engage more with the events in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are always new events coming up and new things. At least in Beijing, you really can see it. And let's say on the Startup Digest, you can see all the events in Chinese and all the events in English. It's actually two separate things. It's the same newsletter. So you can choose either or to which one you want to go and see and kind of find your way around there. I want to talk more about more of the startup scene in general in Hong Kong versus China. So the way I see it and from my experience, at least in Beijing, there are two ecosystems for entrepreneurs. There is one which is the more Chinese one, which is in Haidian district, and there is the international one, which is in Chaoyang. And this is the two ecosystems. There are people going back and forth between the two, but generally speaking, there are a lot of events happening in Haidian and a lot of events happening in Chaoyang. And as far as I hear from people in the industry, there are the four largest cities where there is entrepreneurship all around. It's Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, and Shenzhen. And I guess you can also say Chengdu, actually, these days, in terms of entrepreneurship ecosystem. But by far, Beijing is the largest ecosystem in tech scene in China. People sometimes say it's 10 times more than all the rest of them. And I think where everything is happening is either in Chaoyang, but the one which is called the Silicon Valley of China is Zhongguancun, and that's a small area in Haidian. So this is where things happen in terms of Chinese entrepreneurship. I don't know a lot about Hong Kong ecosystem. I hear that it's fairly small and still building itself. And some of it is because the government is encouraging it. But sometimes the true innovation still doesn't come out of there. I don't know if you agree or not, Mike.
I know this where we were thinking there might be some differences, but there's definitely, I think it's the government's involvement is, I think, the difference in Beijing versus everywhere else. And when I first came to China in 2007, I went to Beijing too. I kind of visited all the different cities. And even then, I think that was also the tech center. It's, I think, because it's the capital of China. And it's where the government is. So usually, like, especially tech companies need to have the, some people think it's a negative word, like guanxi, or the relationships with the Chinese government. So I would think that that's the place to be if you're trying to do a true technology company in mainland China, where I usually tell people go to Shanghai if they're trying to do, like, e-commerce and, like, fashion. And but this, yeah, like Hong Kong, that's one of the issues with Hong Kong. It's not really China. It's not really, it's not Silicon Valley. And then there's Singapore, which gets a lot of investor money too. So one of the issues in Hong Kong with, you know, getting investors is that investors are usually putting money into stocks or real estate. So they've been really working hard to try to get people to become investors in startups or technology companies. But it's always a chicken or the egg, because there's not really been a huge exit of like a Facebook or even like a Baidu or something big like in China has made. And the market's not that big. So, you know, you can't, you have to kind of be international from day one. And, you know, it's basically just, it's just, I like Hong Kong because it's an international city and they have to be, you know, that's why it had the multi-currency accounts, and they have to kind of, it's also like a logistics and e-commerce hub for global business. So a lot of money has been going into fintech in Hong Kong. So if you're doing like financial technology or fintech, if you're doing like maybe an e-commerce service like logistics or fulfillment, there's a lot of them popping up now in Hong Kong. But I guess, you know, I can't really contest Hong Kong as being bigger tech scene than mainland China's Beijing, just because I think it's the government and the massive size of the Chinese market being, you know, being there. So I have to kind of agree with you, although I hope Hong Kong continues to improve. It has been improving a lot. There's been more and more incubators and startup platforms for entrepreneurs in Hong Kong. And there's also been some programs like Cyberport and Hong Kong Science Park, which are government like kind of like places for technology companies and startups to get either free space, some kind of reimbursements, usually not straight money, but there are some actual grants, cash grants. But yeah, I mean, I can't really beat you on the debate of Hong Kong being bigger startup scene than Beijing. So
we can debate about the innovation side, maybe. Again, I don't hear good stuff, but I mean, you see things from there. It's kind of, you know, the government is pouring money, but not real innovation is coming out. They're still kind of struggling on this. So I don't know if any companies made it big in Hong Kong, entrepreneurs. I don't know of any.
Well, the thing is, like, you can also contest Alibaba was listed in Hong Kong stock market. And, you know, like, I don't think Baidu's U.S., but a lot of people like they even use the benefits of a Hong Kong company. I guess, of course, their operations aren't there, but a lot of them set up, like, on the stock market or even use a Hong Kong company for their international expansion, like we've been saying. Mm-hmm. So I think Hong Kong is still needed a lot of times for these even Chinese startups.
I see. Maybe it's the more of a place for, you know, connecting startups, as you said, e-commerce and, like, you know, the biggest port in the world, I think, is in Hong Kong, or one of the biggest. Like, so these kind of things for sourcing, it's close to Shenzhen. That's the place to be for those kind of startups.
Yep.
Versus more of a, like, tech, hardcore tech, especially software, would be in Beijing. Hardware is still in Shenzhen, as an example. Yeah, totally. Again, because all the factories are there. So yeah. Well, we accept questions about different startup types. So if you want to ask us about this, feel free. We'll according to what we know, we'd be happy to recommend of what fits more to our listeners.
Yeah, I think that we went a little bit over the limit on our show today, and I hope you guys got some. There's so much. I mean, we have more points. There's so many.
Yeah, well,
there's so many. I mean, there's
we have a lot of points.
I mean, do people like this comparison format, or we could maybe just highlight on certain cities or industries? But yeah, I mean, of course, to try to really cover all of this in one show is crazy, and that's why everybody should just subscribe to the podcast and keep up to date with future shows. This is just one of many more great ones to come. Right, Shlomo?
Yeah, definitely. We've got interesting interviews coming up, as Mike mentioned earlier. We can't publish them ahead, but what you can do if you want, I will open my Periscope channel, which is periscope.tv/startupnoodle for these kind of recordings. So you can come in, ask questions, and have an interactive podcast while we speak. Awesome. So I invite you to follow as well. Okay, let's wrap up. Okay. Thank you very much, guys, for this. Mike, again, I'm really honored to join this show and co-host.
Sure. I'm excited to have you, Shlomo. And we're feedback driven, right? So we've been saying, we would love to hear from you guys. And if you have ideas for topics or guests, to just shout out our website we're using is chinabusinesscast.com. And of course, hit up Shlomo on Periscope or us. You know, we'll list all of our social media channels on the show notes. So stay tuned, guys. And thanks, Shlomo, for coming on.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Wag. Thank you very much. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Doing business in China is a complex world. You can quickly feel alone and lost in its maze. But don't worry. China Business Cast is here for you. Sign up for our newsletter and regular updates on our website at www.chinabusinesscast.com. Thanks for tuning in.